Hey, hey! What's up, everybody? That was terrible. Hey, I don't know if you guys noticed this or not, but we were having a few issues with our lighting system. The place is not on fire. That is haze. So we're going to go like rock star style and do it like that. So anyway, hey, we're continuing a series this week called Swipe Right. And so if you've missed any of it, kind of the gist of the series is that, there's a phrase that has been popularized over the last couple of years called Swipe Right, right? Swipe Right. There's an app especially, or apps that utilize this technology. So if you're interested in someone, you swipe right. If you're not, you swipe left. And then oftentimes for example, with Tinder, it leads to a very meaningless romantic encounter. And that's kind of the culture we live in. And these are things that we need to be comfortable talking about, because if you can't talk about it at church, where in the world are you going to talk about it? And here's the funny thing. Like, so we were in youth ministry for almost 10 years, and we got in trouble. Well, Shelly never gets in trouble. I got in trouble a couple of times because we would talk about sex to teenagers. And some of these parents were so appalled that we had the audacity to talk to teenagers about sex. And I'm like, do you think they don't talk about it at school? So if they're not learning about it at church in the proper context, they're going to learn about it from their perverted junior high friends. So for whatever that's worth. So this week, you guys are, your comedy level is at an all-time low. It is struggling. So this week we're talking about, and let me kind of give you some of the context where we've been the last couple of weeks. We've talked about just some of the lies that are presented when it comes to dating and romance and sex and marriage. And so what we want to talk about today is kind of a continuation of one of the lies that gets perpetuated in our culture, and that is that marriage is boring. Marriage is lame, right? And this is kind of a recent development, I think. I think that so often in culture, marriage is presented as the old ball and chain, right? If you heard this expression, you watch TV shows and it's like married couples are idiots and it's the single people who are just living la vida loca, right? Just having a great, great time in their life. Can somebody bring that cake up here to this table? And there's another little thing right beside it, a little card. Can you grab that as well? Thank you, sir. Da-da. Anyway, so we're going to talk about worth fighting for. And I think what happens in our marriages oftentimes is that we end up fighting in them and not fighting for them. Yeah, put them up here. You can't have any. Thank you, sir. Well, you could have some if you wanted some. You're big. Did y'all ever watch Napoleon Dynamite? Right, and so Napoleon, in his romantic way, is like, are you drinking 2% because you think you're fat? It's like, you could drink whole milk if you wanted to. Anyway, so we're going to talk about marriage today. We're here today to celebrate marriage. And so if you're not married, it's okay, because I suspect at some point in your life you plan on getting married. And even if you are the hashtag forever alone person, you probably know some married people. And so it would be good to know what marriage looks like so you can support them, because life's not just about you. But that's another story for another day, right? And so one of the more recent developments with respect to marriage is that, oh man, marriage is lame. That's what you do when you're boring. That's what you do after you sow your wild oats and you get your wild living out of your system, which is, again, really stupid advice, because that never gets out of your system, right? So when you get married, there's no fun. There's no passion. There's no spontaneity. It's like a prison sentence, like, 99, right? You're done for the rest of your life. And so what happens, like we said, is that you end up fighting in your marriages rather than for your marriages. And things are always going to be competing for the time and attention of your relationship. So let's just start at the beginning, right? So you've got, it always starts with the female, because let's be honest, they run things. All the dudes were awfully quiet on that one. And the ladies were like, mm-hmm, that's right, white boy. So then, the dude comes along, and here we are. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. Right? So they get married, correct? This is what happens. And so this is incredible. This is the way that it's supposed to be. This is the way that God designed our relationships and our marriages to be, that the husband and wife, it talks about in Genesis 2:24, that the two become one, and it's this gift from God. It's something that he instituted and that he blesses. And when we're married and we love only each other and our relationship is exclusive, then there's a blessing that we get to experience from God. But what happens is, especially in our culture, things like this take place. Babies do one of three things. They eat, they sleep, and they poop. That's it. But that's fine. Look, I understand you. It's a stage of life, right? We've all been there. So you go through all of this. Here's the problem that we have with this happens, I think, more now than ever before. So often, when a husband and wife, they get married and they have children, they trade in their role of husband and wife and become only daddy and mommy, right? They sacrifice their relationship for the relationship of their children, the well-being of their children. And here's the problem with that. What are you going to do when the kids are gone? There won't be anything left if you've sacrificed it all on the altar of the well-being of your children. Here's the thing. Kids are pretty resilient. So if you actually just take a little more time and love your spouse, they're going to benefit from that, right? They're not going to feel neglected. They're not going to feel like, oh, you know, my parents don't love me because they only love themselves or each other, not themselves. But you get what I'm saying. And so this is the culture we live in where, you know, let's take our kids to, I don't know, practice on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, play games all day on Saturday, tournaments on Sunday, in hopes that our children will be professional athletes and there is no relationship because we're always on the road. And let me just give you a newsflash. Your kid ain't going to make it. Right? Look, I know we're all aspiring athletes, right? We all have these dreams. Like when I was in junior high, I told a teacher one time, and I appreciate now her honesty. I hated her guts then. Because when I was in junior high, I was about 5'2", 120, right? Just, there was no size. All heart, baby, all heart. And so she pulled me out. I was acting like a butt in class, and she pulled me out. And she's like, what do you want to do when you grow up? I was like, I'm going to be in the NFL. And she's like, in the event that that doesn't work out, what are you going to, and I was like, what? Didn't really have a backup plan, you know? And the same thing should be, your kids probably ain't going to make it. Like, let's just be honest. It's 0.00001% chance that they're going to make it to where they get paid to be athletes. And even if they do, they're not worried about you. Like, at that point, they're spending their money on themselves. I don't know. You sacrificed your entire life for your kids to be athletes who don't care about you anymore, right? And it's just crazy. But so many people buy into this stupid idea that, oh, I'm going to sacrifice husband and wife to be mom and dad, and so we give so much for our children. All right, then we've got work. This is a briefcase. I don't know how well you guys can see this. We've got work. Let's put this one right here. That's good. Maybe. Wham. And I think oftentimes we put work in front of our spouse, and I've been guilty of this, and I get so frustrated when I get called out on it. Have you guys ever been called out by your spouse, and they're right, and you're just like, shut up, but thank you. You know, it's like, I don't know how else you would go about that. So sometimes what I'm guilty of is I'll put so much energy and effort into my work that when I get home, I don't have anything left and my family suffers as a result of me giving everything to a thing rather than leaving something for a person, right? So we let our jobs, our businesses, whatever we're pouring ourselves into as far as our careers are concerned, we let that take the place of fight for the attention of ourselves and in the place of our spouse. Ooh. Let's talk about it. Cell phones, social media. That one really should go up front too. Because we actually put these in front of our children. Because when we go to the restaurants and we stick a tablet in our kids' hands and then we are both on our cell phones and we're ignoring our entire family structure, we put that above everything, which is just unbelievable. Unfreaking believable. So let's have a new rule. We do this occasionally at Motion. We make our own rules. That's fun. So if you guys are out and you see somebody else who attends Motion and they are at dinner with their spouse and they're both on their phones, you have every right to come up and swat the phone out of their hands. In Jesus' name. Because anytime you add that to the end of a rule, it just makes it, yeah, that's good. That's right. So now this is the way that our evenings typically end, or unfortunately, this is probably the norm for a lot of people. The evenings end lying in bed next to the love of your life, staring at your phone, right? And you've got the glow of the iPhone illuminating the room, and it's so romantic, except that you're not worried about them at all because you've allowed other things and other people and social media and whatever it is that you do not you guys, right? Y'all get so, just stop being so sensitive. I'm talking about other people. But we allow these things to take the place of, they're fighting for the space of the attention that our spouses should get, right? So let's go here. Let's go, we'll call these, this is kind of a comprehensive one. It's like hobbies, extracurricular activities, not just football, because football is from God. Proven. But, you know, you see couples that get married and it's like, hey, I'm going to go hang out with the boys.
Awesome. That's fine. Like every once in a while. You don't hang out with the boys every night, homeboy. You shouldn't have got married if that's what you thought you was going to be doing, because you didn't marry the boys. And if you did, we have another conversation to have, right? And so this is what it blows me away, because I know we know this stuff, but sometimes I think we forget this stuff, that marriage is sacrifice. And it's a sacrifice that when we're dating, we're so willing to make, but then when we get married, oftentimes we're not willing to make the same sacrifices. Like when you're dating somebody, man, you will climb the highest mountain and you will swim the deepest ocean, and you'll go from the Atlantic and across that, and if you got to go over the Pacific too, that's fine. You'll put on scuba gear, you'll do your thing, like you'll march through the most treacherous terrain for the one that you love, and then you get married and you can't even take out the trash. That was for me, because I'm so bad about that. I'm like, dang, man, you're right. And so I think a lot of times we put other like recreational things in front of our spouses, and so it competes for the space that was only intended for them. What about credit cards, debt, finances, stuff? Right, because we are living the American dream, where we are in pursuit of the next thing that will scratch the itch. Yeah. Right, we're always in pursuit of the next item or the next purchase that's going to make us feel validated and worthy of everybody's attention. And we're going to pay attention to you for about 5 minutes, and then we're on to the next thing. Right, and so often I think we put stuff ahead of. We're just going to stick it right there. How about that? Boom. So now, what we've got is a really crowded top tier that was only intended for two people. And so what happens is now all of this stuff is fighting for the attention of the two people who should only be fighting for each other. What happens is we often fight in our relationships because of all the things that we allow to crowd the top tier, that we fight in them rather than fight for them. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Let's fight for our relationships. Let's fight for our marriages, because they're worth fighting for. They're worth fighting for. Y'all could repeat that if you wanted to. You don't have to. It's too late now. So there was an article in Time magazine. This wasn't the National Enquirer. I think it's important to cite the source in that particular instance. And it just kind of, it spells out in detail this mentality that people have towards marriage. And this is what it says. We have these on the screens for you. It says, there's a reason that fairy tales always end in marriage. Have you noticed that? Yeah. Fairy tales always end in marriage, when really that's just the beginning, isn't it? And so the fairy tales always end in marriage, and it says, because nobody wants to see what comes after. It's too grim. And so we celebrate the initial spark and fire, right? Meeting the right person, working through cosmic misunderstandings. These are the stories that are worth telling. Even overcoming disapproval from your family to get to the altar. Those are all things that we tell in our fairy tale stories, right? But plodding on year after year with that same old soul, Yawnsville. This is in Time magazine. This is an article that they wrote. And so it's just this lie that's perpetuated that marriage is lame, and marriage is awful, and marriage is a prison sentence, and marriage is the old ball and chain, that there's no fun after the initial spark, or no fun after the chemistry and the sizzle and the passion and the newness of the relationship. Now, what happens is there's actually some depth to the relationships. There's some substance to the relationship. So it's not all predicated based on your feelings, because your feelings are always going to deceive you. But we don't like to talk about it, right? It's funny to me how, like, this idea of, you know, day after day, month after month, week after week, year after year, I got that in backup, messed up order, but you understand what I'm saying, right? Yeah. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. So this idea that doing something all of that time is just, you know, that's the most awful thing you could possibly subject yourself to. But it's funny how when it comes to money, we don't treat it the same way. Have you ever heard a financial analyst tell you that, man, you definitely should not invest your money day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year? That was a question. No, you have not. And if they are, they're not a very good financial analyst. In fact, they're unemployed financial analysts. And you never want to take advice from a broke financial analyst, right? Because I'm like, I guess those who can't coach, right? I don't know. So maybe that's a possibility. So what happens when it comes to finances, and we talk about investing and your life savings and all of those things. So the power is only tapped into when you invest in it day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. It's called compound interest. Albert Einstein said that compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. He said, those who know about it, they earn it. Those who don't, they pay it. And I was like, dang, Albert, you had to go there, right? And so if we, it's the same concept, right? We're investing in this relationship. We're constantly, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, investing into this relationship. But it's Yawnsville on this side, but it's good stewardship if it's with respect to your finances, right? It's, oh, you're just a wise investor. And I think we get to experience the benefits of compound interest in our relationships if we continue to invest in it. But that's not the way that we do things. When things get rocky, and here's the thing, there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be bull and bear markets, right? You're going to have times where things are just rocking and rolling, and times where things are just a lot more challenging. Like that's needs to be understood, right? But for whatever reason, it's okay over here, but it's not okay on this side of it. I think that marriages, as you invest in them, you get to experience the blessing of compound interest. You have someone that you get to experience life with. So there's this, I heard a story, and I haven't done the math on this. All of you mathematicians could probably do this in your head, but you have to take my word like I took somebody else's word and then fact check it later and don't send me an email. Seriously. But I heard a story about if you invest from the age 25 to the age 35, like you're investing for a retirement, let's say $5,000 a year, and you stop at age 35, you stopped investing in that account. And then you have somebody on the other hand who started investing at age 35, and they invested all the way until age 65, the same amount each year, that the person who started investing at age 25 would actually have more money at retirement than the person who started investing 10 years later, because that's the power of compound interest. And I think we get to experience some compound interest. There are studies that show how when you get through some difficult seasons with your spouse, there are chemicals in your brain that actually attach you to them even more. So there's oxytocin is one of them, which is just these fascinating neurological things that are going on in our brains, which some of us, there's not a lot going on in our brains. But that's happening, right? Just kidding. So marriage, for whatever reason, is not treated, it's not glorified like our investments and our finances are. It's kind of looked down upon. It's kind of, you know, one of those things that we cast shade at. And so it's funny how even well-meaning people give really bad advice when it comes to marriage. I think well-meaning people give really bad advice when it comes to marriage. And if you haven't said this or experienced this, you've probably at least heard this. And so you see a couple that's about to get married, and you know they're all excited, right? Of course they're giddy because they're about to spend $27,000 on a wedding. Awesome. That's the national average. And so they're all excited about it, right? And and you ask them why they love each other, and they're like, I love him, right? And there's so very little substance, right? In some cases, nobody in this room would ever do anything quite like that. And so when they're about to get married, some of these well-meaning people, they kind of present to them this dark, ominous relationship that's about to take place. They're like, oh, you're fixing to get married. Good luck. Right? That's the way that we kind of present it. Oh, year one? Man, that's like, you got two completely different people trying to make their life fit together and work. And that's the honeymoon. What, year two? Dang. What you gonna do then, right? In year three, you ain't gonna make it. Right? These are the stupid things that people say. Like, and maybe they're well-meaning. Maybe they're just trying to be realistic, right? But they present it as if it's this death sentence. And it doesn't have to be like that. Now, I know that we haven't seen a lot of great examples of this in our society, but they act like you're about to marry a savage. Or you're Maximus about to go into the Colosseum for some gladiatorial battle, right? It's like, you better gear up, man. It's on. Like neck bone. But the truth is that marriage is intended to be good. Yeah. Marriage is intended to be something that we actually enjoy. And you see so often, and of course it's the things that are loud that get our attention, right? You see people who are married who hate each other, and you're just like, why would I ever want any part of that? But we don't pay attention to the married couple who's been together for 50 years and they actually still love each other. Shelly, she's always quick to point this stuff out. We were at a restaurant the other day, and there was a couple, they had to be in their 70s, and they were just, she was like, they're so cute, right? And I'm sure they've been married for 50 years, and they're just like at lunch talking to each other, and they love each other, and it's just this cool. That's the point. That's the objective. That's the end game for us. Like, that's where we want to get with it, right? So marriage is intended to be fun, not that there won't be challenges. Let's just be honest, right? There are always challenges. Every relationship has challenges. Your kids, good Lord. Parents, y'all vocal box is not working this morning. You're struggling. But this is something that we can and should experience joy in. It's this institution that God created. So you have someone to laugh with, and you have someone to cry with. Right, you have someone to enjoy the highest of highs and the lowest of lows with. You have somebody to be spontaneous with, somebody to travel the world with, somebody who at the end of your life you can look back and you've got all of these shared memories if you don't quit investing. So what happens with your savings account if you go close it out and cash it out and you go blow all your money and you have to start all over? You lose all of the power of the compound interest. And I think because of, you know, our willingness oftentimes just to throw in the towel and quit and not continue to invest in our relationships, that's exactly what we're doing. We have to continue to let it to mature and continue to invest in it, right? And so here's the funny thing. So as almost kind of a side note or a concession, the same article in Time Magazine said this. It says, studies do suggest, almost as if like they're like, we really don't want to put this in here, but the facts are the facts. Studies do suggest that married people will have better sex, better health, and better wealth. You're going to be healthier, and you're going to make more money, and will probably die happier than singles with a lower likelihood of strokes, heart disease, and depression. And it also says that married people also respond better to stress and heal more quickly. In other words, when you get married, you become like an X-Man. You're Wolverine. And you just start healing rapidly. I don't know what's up with that. And here's what's, it's just amazing to me. Like, this wasn't the lead of the story. This was buried under all the marriage's boring crap. Right? It's like, oh, Yawnsville and ball and chain and life sentence and all of these bad aspects of marriage. And then underneath all of that, if you can kind of dig through and find the truth, it's that, oh, wow, this stuff is actually good for you, right? There's benefits in this. And so the compound interest is, oh, we actually make more money if we're married and we invest together. Oh, we're actually healthier. Our bodies are physically healthier if we do life together. It's just unbelievable that that's how we get to it. This is what the Bible says about it in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 22. It says, find a good spouse and you find a good life. There's one version that says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing. And I think it's got to be said just like that. And even more, you not only find a good life, but even more, you find the favor of God. And that's just kind of our primary objective today. Man, we're just here to celebrate marriage. We're here to celebrate this thing that God instituted, that God gave to us as a gift, right? And just simply because it's a lie that's perpetuated in culture that, oh, man, you know, this thing is, it's not as good as everybody cracks it up to be. And it's a blessing. It's powerful. Not that there won't be challenges. We know the statistics. 50% of divorces or American marriages end in divorce. Like, we know that. Like, one out of two. You know, so you could go across the room, you, yes, you, no, you, yes, you, no, right? Like, I mean, just not that we would do that. That would be awful. Probably the worst decision we ever made as a church. But 50% of divorces or American marriages end in divorce. And what's crazy is 67% of second marriages end in divorce. And then 73% of third marriages end in divorce. And you see, it just becomes increasingly more challenging when you divest everything that you've invested and you kind of go on to the next thing. And that's not that we're here to cast shame or, you know, again, like we talked about the first week. Our objective is from this day forward. Like, hey, what do we need to do from this day forward to honor God with our relationships, to honor God in our marriages, to honor God with our romance? And so we're not saying that it's easy, but we are saying that it's worth fighting for. So how many married folk do we have in the room? If you're married, I want you to raise up your hand. Like you're proud of it. Come on. All right. Good, good. Now, how many of you guys have been married for a year or less? Year or less? Hey, you guys. Year or less? Okay, okay. How about 2 years? How many of you guys have been married 2 years? Yeah. All right, good, good. We're going to make this just really awkward and really personal for everyone. All right, how many of you guys have been married 5 years or less? I know some of you have to continue to raise your hand. Let's do it like this. Everybody who's married, raise your hand. Hold it up. All right, if you've been married for less than a year, put your hand down. If you've been married for less than 2 years, put your hand down. If you've been married for less than 5 years, put your hand down. If you've been married for less than 10 years, put your hand down. If you've been married for less than 15 years, put your hand down. Oh, it's getting competitive. All right, 20 years. Losers. We've only been married for 16. Shelly and I have been married for 16. All right, so 20, 25. I feel like an auctioneer. 20, give me 20, give me 25, all right? So 25, all right, 30. Oh, how long? 35 years. 36, you're in trouble. 30, wow. Hey, so we have something, we have a gift for you. Can you come get this? Since you got the number of years wrong, maybe this will make up for it. That's awesome. 36 going on 37 years. It's incredible. So that's the thing, man. I'm sure everyone who's been married for more than a day has had some challenges within the context of your relationships and your marriage specifically, right? It's challenging. But the idea is that, hey, we're going to continue to fight for each other. We're going to fight with each other, for each other, not against each other. We're fighting for it, not in it. I heard a story one time about a husband and wife. And you know, guys, sometimes we don't know when to draw the line. That was a softball toss, and this is what you guys did. You just watched it hit the ground. Like, the lady should have been like, mm-hmm, and the dude should be like, no, man. Right, getting all defensive, because you would never do that. So I think so many times guys don't know when to draw the line. So I heard a story about a husband and wife, and she's getting ready for work. She's got a big presentation that day, and it's just really important for her, and she's put a lot of work and energy and time into this presentation. So her husband comes in, and she's getting dressed, and she's wearing a blue dress, and, you know, it's very nice. And so he comes in, and it's got a zipper on the back, and he starts jacking with the zipper. Anybody else ever do anything like this, right? Zippers are just so entertaining, right? I guess if you have ADD, it's like zipper, right? So he comes in and starts jacking with the zipper, and she's like, stop, right? You know, as females often do, stop it. And so he doesn't pick up on the cues, and he just keeps messing with it and accidentally breaks the zipper on the dress that she had decided to wear that day to this very important presentation. And he didn't know, because dudes are oftentimes just clueless to some of this stuff. He didn't know that the day before she had it dry cleaned, and it was the exact dress that she wanted to wear that day for that presentation that was very important to her. And so she's hot, right? She is upset. And so she leaves, and if you guys, you've probably heard this, that men are like waffles and women are like spaghetti. And so guys kind of have the ability to compartmentalize stuff. He's like, yeah, that sucked. Go on about my day, right? Go to work, and now I'm in my work zone, right? And so I got some syrup in here, so all is well. And then he comes home, and he's in the next zone, and it's all good. But women are like spaghetti. This is what science says. I don't know if this is true for everyone, but it's a generalization, right? And so the spaghetti is like, so this happened at work, so these noodles are interwoven with these noodles, so this is how I felt at home, so this is now how I feel at work, so I'm probably not going to have a good day at work because of what happened this morning. And so she gets off, and the noodles are still intertwined, and she is still upset. So she comes home, and she sees her husband underneath the car, working on something underneath the car, and all that's hanging out are his legs and his zipper. So she's like, I'm going to show you, right? He's, you know, you crossed the line. And so she reaches down and grabs his zipper and starts, you know, messing with his zipper just to be annoying, not to be provocative, right? And so she's like, ha, gotcha, and then just goes on in like all is well. She walks into her kitchen, and she finds her husband in the kitchen, making a cup of tea. And so she's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, I live here. And she's like, who's under the car? And he's like, oh, you know, the neighbor came over and helped me with, I had a muffler issue and I needed somebody to look at it. And so she's freaking out. So, of course, they run out there, and the guy, the neighbor underneath the car did exactly what anybody would do if somebody come, like if you come and start messing with their zipper and you're not prepared for it. He came up and knocked himself out on the bottom of the car, and so he's out cold underneath the car. I don't know if that's a true story, but it's a funny story. And it's something that I could see happening in reality, because there's going to be conflict, right? There's going to be things that we just don't see eye to eye on, and we don't really understand where they're coming from, even though we try, and I don't know how you feel or why you feel like you feel, and this is how I feel, and it's not really jiving. But what we do is we need to continue to work through it. We need to continue to fight for each other through it. And so the point is just that, hey, it's going to be challenging. Like, there are going to be challenges. Anything that God institutes or designs, the devil opposes. And so it's fascinating. If you go back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, it says that God created man and woman, and the man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall be one. And in verse 25, it says this, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. And I think you have to say it like that. It's all about how you say what you say, right? And they were not ashamed. Like, in other words, it's all good in the hood. That's the way it was supposed to be. It's something that God created. It's a gift that he gave us. But look what happens in the very next verse, Genesis chapter 3, verse 1. In the original text, there wasn't a chapter break. It's just like this was, you know, a continuing story. So in verse 1, it says, now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? So you've got this institution, this thing that God creates for us to be a part of. You've got marriage, and then you've got them being naked together, and it's okay because that's what they were created to do. And the very next thing that happens, it says, and then the serpent. And then the devil opposes what it is that God put together. He tries to unto the one, right? The two become one, and he tries to unto the one because he understands that there's power in unity. And so anytime that there's an opportunity for us to be together and to build the depths of our relationship and to have unity in our families, the devil's going to oppose that. And I'm not one to talk about, like, the devil running around with a pitchfork and horns and all that stuff. But, look, we just got to understand there are powers that are at work that are trying to oppose anything that God stands for. And so in marriage, it's not much different. So we're going to look at a story. There's a passage in the Old Testament that we're going to look at quickly. And it's this story about Moses and Joshua, and they're going into battle. And I think it's a perfect backdrop because I think so many times relationships are a battle, not that we're fighting with each other, but we're fighting for each other. And it's also a really good illustration because the relationship that God has with his people is oftentimes compared to a marriage. So if you read through the Old Testament, you see where it talks about God and the children of Israel, and so many times he kind of uses the imagery of a husband and a wife to describe that relationship. So this is what it says. Exodus chapter 17, verses 9 through 13, it says, and Moses said to Joshua, choose us some men. I think Moses was from Longview. He's a redneck. He's like, go get us some men. Dink. Choose us some men and go out. Fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand, the staff. So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hands that the Israelites prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. So this is kind of the story. Joshua is out fighting the battle. Moses, Aaron, and Hur are on top of the hill. And whenever Moses' arms are up and he's holding this staff, then the children of Israel are winning. But when his arms start to come down because he's getting tired, the children of Israel start to lose. So Aaron and Hur, they come in and they prop up his arms and they put him on a stone. And so the rest of the battle is fought like that. And of course, they won because his arms were up. And there's some really cool things that we're going to look at about that story. The first point for all of this is, if you're in a relationship, specifically a marriage, this works for any relationship, keep a cool head. Keep a cool head. Now, let's not play the victim game where my daddy had a hot head, so I'm going to have a hot head. You are your own person, and you get to choose how you respond to every circumstance that you respond to. for whoever that was for. There's an article that was published by the Smithsonian Smithsonian Magazine, right? It's got to be fancy if the Smithsonian put it out. And they were talking about how cheetahs can actually, they can run at their top speed of 75 miles an hour for just a little bit of time, because what happens is their brains, when it hits 105 degrees, it starts to overheat. So they have a choice to make at that moment. They can either stop and pant until their brains cool down, and then they can run some more, or they can continue to run and die. Like, those are the options. And not, I mean, seems pretty obvious which one they should do. But it's funny how in relationships, sometimes we don't get it, right? We're hot, and our brains are hot, and we just keep going, and we keep going, and you blow a gasket, and you just screw things up really bad. But the gazelles, who they are typically chasing, right? Cheetahs typically are chasing after gazelles. The gazelles, they can actually run until their bodies are 109 degrees. But this is what happens. Their brains, even though their bodies are 109 degrees, their brains are only 105 degrees. So they can continue to run at top speed for longer time and longer distance. And this is what's happening. So biologically, they've got this little passageway from their you know, however they're inhaling air, right, their mouth and their nose, and it kind of sends this cool air to a chamber in their brain that allows them to keep their, every time they take a breath, it cools off their brain. Every time they breathe and they're running and they're pushing hard, it cools off their brain. So in this particular instance, literally, cooler heads save lives. Because they have a cooler head, they get to live. Whereas the cheetah, if it goes on being hot-headed, it dies. And I think the same thing is true in our relationship. Like, look, you can be mad. You can be upset. You can go off and be nuclear and say something that you shouldn't say or that you will regret. You know that words are like toothpaste. Once they come out, you can't suck it back up. It's done. And you can blame all of that stuff on being hot-headed, but it leads to death in the relationship. Or you can let cooler heads prevail. You can stop, think, let the air get to your brain, and then you'll probably do a lot better job of bringing life to the relationship rather than bringing death to the relationship, right? Instead of, you know, going on with these prideful arguments, we stop and listen and think. So ultimately, it will end in life rather than death. And so what you kind of see in this story, this battle, it was some cool-headed thinking that allowed them to be successful in this conflict, right? So rather than, you know, because they're fighting, and let's say Joshua is out there fighting and Moses' arms are up and they start to come down and they start to lose, Joshua could have started blaming everybody. He could have started bickering. He could have been like, well, you know, if you would have done your job, and if you would have done your job, because this is what we do in relationships, right? If things aren't going our way, so we start blaming other people, and we got all this conflict. But some cool-headed thinking, you've got Aaron and Hur that are like, okay, so the arms need to stay up, and that's what our objective is. So they go underneath, and they hold up, and they prop up his arms, and that's what allowed them to be successful, was some cool-headed thinking. So don't be hot-headed. Be cool-headed. Here's the other thing that I think is really fascinating about that. It says that in order for them to be successful, Moses needed some help. He needed some help. He needed Aaron to stand under one arm, and he needed Hur to stand up, not Hur like H-E-R, but H-U-R, right? He needed Hur to stand under the other arm. And I think the same thing is true in our relationships. We need other people in our lives that kind of model for us or help us work through things, some mediators sometimes. Do you know that couples who regularly attend church together are 35% less likely to divorce? It's because they got some help. They got some people who are holding up their arms when they're getting tired. That was a lot better than you responded. I'm just going to let it be known that I'm really disappointed in your response as a church. Thank you very much. So that's the first point, is that, hey, keep a cool head. The second one is this, and we're going to close with this. Build your life on the rock. And thank you. That was a better response. That was better. It's better. It's slow. It didn't really spread like it should have, but it's cool. So build your life on the rock. And here's the thing. I know that's cliche. I know that's something you would expect a pastor to say. That's what we're supposed to say, right? But the truth is, if you look at the story, you look at that Moses, during this conflict, during this battle, during this fight, he got tired, right? And he sat down. What did he sit down on? A stone, a rock. He built the foundation for his success in this battle was the rock. And I think it's just kind of really cool. It's a metaphor or whatever you want to call it. But when our relationships are a foundation, and that foundation is Jesus, we can endure any battle. We can get through anything. We can get through any conflict. We can get through any fight, any argument, any difference. When we build our lives, like, you know, Jesus tells this story about these two different people who built houses, right? One of them built their house on sand, and one of them built their house on a rock. And he was like, hey, look, the waves are going to crash against both of them. The wind is going to blow hard against both of them. Like, both of them are going to experience a storm, but when it's all over, only one of them remains standing. And it's the one that's built on the rock, right? And it's the same thing. You see so many relationships that are built on sand. Like, oh, she's hot. That's sand, because beauty kind of fades, right? Look, I've seen pictures. Somebody told me the other day, she's like, man, you've aged. I'm like, thank you. And it wasn't a slight, but I took it that way, right? I'm sensitive. But our beauty fades. Our metabolism slows. Our wrinkles develop, right? All of these things start that gravity does what gravity does. You know, it's just these things happen. So if your relationship is built on how someone looks, that's sand. If your relationship is built on material possessions, that's sand. Because what are you going to do when you don't have what you used to have? Or what are you going to do when you can't generate income like you used to because you lost your job or you got hurt or whatever happened, right? That's all sand. We've got to build our relationships on the rock. The rock is, hey, God is love, God is forgiveness, God is mercy, God is grace, God is joy, God is hope, and that's the foundation of our relationships. When that's the foundation of your relationship, what trial, what adversity, what fight is greater than that? There isn't one, there isn't anything. I love how in Romans it talks about there's no height and there's no depth, there's no adversity, there's no mountain, and there's no valley that can separate us from the love of God. And if that love that God has given to us is in us, it's the same kind of love that we give to other people, especially our spouses, especially our wife, especially our husband. Because if there's anybody that deserves it, it's them for putting up with you. That's for me. I don't know about you guys. And so the foundation of our relationship has to be the rock. It has to be Jesus, because if not, good luck. Like, I know we talked about how people kind of, they talk about how, listen, if it's without Jesus, good luck. Like, I honestly don't know how people have successful relationships without Jesus. More power to them. But for us, that's not the answer. The answer is Jesus. It's always about Jesus, right? Everything ultimately circles back to Jesus. And that's what we need to center our lives on, especially our relationships on. Here's the deal. Like, we can be models in the world that we live in as to what relationships should look like. Instead of us looking to Hollywood for our examples of what marriages look like that last 2.5 years and end in this, you know, explosion of a divorce. Or we can continue to plot on day after day, week after week, month after year, and be boring and show them what real life is all about. We can teach our children what culture can't, about what marriages really are, about what relationships really are. So build your relationship on the rock. Let me pray for us. God, thank you so much for all that you do for us. God, we can never repay it. We certainly can't earn it, but you give it anyway. That's what grace is. That's what mercy is. Thank you. God, I pray that if there's anybody in the room today that hasn't built their life on the rock, that they haven't given all of themselves to you and asked you to come into their life, to be the center of their life, to be the most important thing in person in their life, God, that today is the day for them to do that. God, I pray that when we leave this place, God, that you would put on our hearts the importance of our relationships. God, that we wouldn't allow things to crowd the top tier of that cake. God, that it would only be what it's supposed to be. We wouldn't allow these ancillary things to come in and take the space, that we'd fight for each other, not with these things. God, we love you. Thank you so much for your truth. Thank you for your word. Thank you for giving us insight on what it takes to be successful in our relationships. We love you, and it's in Jesus' incredible name, and everybody said, amen.